Ask your mother.
All right. So welcome to today's episode. I am here with Rachel Talavera. We've known each other for,
well 11. Over a decade at this point.
Yeah, we've known each other for a while. Our husbands worked together, like, a few times.
Yes, yeah, a couple of different places across the planet.
Right? Yes, we went from Virginia to Japan, and we met up again in Florida.
Yeah.
I was on a little vacation, hurricane vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
It's been a journey, right? Like, we've had a journey as friends.
I know. It's been crazy to see, like, how we've evolved as people, and I don't know. Like,
Well, I think when we first met, both of us have kids that are right about the same age, except for your youngest, because I don't have a third child. But our oldest, I think, they're only about a month apart, and then your second and my last are just a couple of months apart, because we were pregnant at the same time that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's crazy.
Yes.
Humans are no longer a tiny. I was talking to the husband about that the other day. I was like, we're about to have a 12-year-old. Let that sink in.
Yeah. I don't want to. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah. Let that sink in and ruminate for a second.
Oh my gosh. Like this. So that's a good I guess, like, little segue into what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what you were like before you had kids, like pre-babies. Who was Rachel? Because now we're mom.
I would have to say I was probably a pretty crazy young adult, honestly. I was active duty, just like you were. I spent most of my money on things that I should not have been spending my money on. I lived on a ship. And I partied with my friends. I didn't really have goals in life aside from the next day, you know, getting up the next day and going to work. I had no real plans. I'm from a small town in Texas, so graduating high school and getting away from my hometown were that was really it. And once I got in the Navy and got away from home, I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm just gonna work this job and do what I'm doing. So there was a lot of going out and a lot of working. That was it.
Going out and working.
I mean, life.
Buying things we know we shouldn't have been buying at that age. Like, yes. What's the same?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Who was buying a car when you had nowhere to park it except on the pier? Like, that was not, yeah. So, you know, I was doing the same thing most, you know, people, right, were doing with their first, you know, good job, because at that time I felt like I was making, you know, decent money. and I was living on a ship and I didn't have any real adult responsibilities. You know, the Navy told me when to get up and they told me when to go eat and they told me what I could do and when I could do it. And that was that.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Right. I mean, it was just one of those things. You know, I had small adult responsibilities like a cell phone bill, but nothing serious. Nothing serious until, you know, tiny humans. And then there was a lot of responsibility. Really fast.
How long, at what age did you become a mom?
I had my first at 19. Yes, I was 19 when my daughter was born.
So you were still a baby.
I was still a baby. I pretty much went from mom and dad's house to having a tiny human of my own. I mean, pretty within the first year of being away from home, I had a tiny human.
Sounds about right. Sounds like
yeah.
me.
Yeah, we, you and I have followed very similar patterns in life, my friend.
Yeah. Oh, and then, of course, since our kids are close in age, obviously, I know how far apart your kids are, but how, no, not everybody does. So how far apart are your kids?
Right, so my kids aren't quite 2 years. So I have a baby, or I have my daughter who was born in 2007, and then I have a son that was born in 2009. So they're not quite 2 years apart. So I had two babies within 2 years, and I was 21 when my oldest was born. So that was, like I say, a lot of responsibility very fast in life. I couldn't even drink, but I had kids.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Did you always want to be a mom? Was it something that you thought about? Because I know when we're kids, we're always, like, especially girls, we're always told, like, hey.
Right. I was the exact opposite of most of my friends. Children were not something that I wanted ever, honestly. When I got pregnant with my oldest, I was super scared. Luckily, you know, I had somebody that was supportive. I was really scared. It was not something that I particularly romanticized. I grew up really poor. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something I was looking forward to as an adult. I really just wanted to be me and go on about my, you know, myself. So no, I didn't ever really plan on having children. It happened. They're awesome. I'm glad that I have them. They definitely shaped me as a person. I don't think I would be a fairly decent him.
I feel you there. I'm trying to take everything that you're saying and, like, listen to it, you know, because I don't want to, like, you know, ask repeat questions and stuff, because I have, like, people are talking to me and it's like, you know, in person, it's kind of like a little bit of ADD. I'll be like, oh, okay, cool. I don't mean
and moving on. No, you're
well, I don't think it's really ADD. I think I'm just trying to multitask, because, you know, as a mom, it's like I have four people constantly talking to me. You know, I've got my three kids, I got my husband, and I'm just, like, trying to listen to all these different conversations. So it's like, right. I'm trying to remember what everybody says and not come off as like, like that kind of thing.
I understand that too.
So after you had your first child, how did you, do you remember feeling any kind of way? Do you remember, like, was it like depressing time, or was it a great time?
So yeah, so I had really bad postpartum the first time. I had some postpartum with my second child, but really bad postpartum with my first. I remember my husband and my mom had came to stay with me because my husband was on a ship and could have possibly not been home when I gave birth. So my mom had came out to stay, and I remember not wanting to get up and feed her. I didn't want to change her diapers. I, in my own head, I was done. Like, I had grown the human. I had the human, and my job in that was done. And when I went and seen my doctor at my 6-week postpartum checkup, I told her, I was like, something's not right. And I ended up on antidepressants for a long time from postpartum.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's good, though, that you were able to get that help, because I know there's a lot of stigma, even to this day. It's 2019, and there's still, like, women who can't get help at all.
Right. And there's something that, you know, not a lot of people, you know, will talk about as well. Because, you know, I remember asking my doctor what was wrong, and she was like, it's just postpartum. It's really normal. She was like, you know, you're really young. you know, I had a baby in November. My dad passed away that January and my husband deployed that February.
Oh.
So, you know, there was a lot going on for me personally. And the fact that, you know, you have a human and, you know, your body's a little crazy from said human. And, you know, you just don't bounce back. It's not,
no,
you know, I kind of expected to have a baby and then just go on about my life. You know, the way that I was doing things prior to having that baby, and everything changes. Nothing ever really goes back to anywhere near where it was, you know, the day before. So.
No, I got you. Yeah. And it's, you were young too. And our brains, you know, are still developing at that age. We're still kids, basically. Yeah. You know, we're thrown into situations where we have to be adults. Once you turn, you can vote, you can do this, you can do that. But it's like, there's no actual handbook on how things are supposed to go. You can read all the baby books in the world. You can go to all the home ec classes, but nothing prepares you for when you actually have to step into those situations.
Not at all. Not at all. My mom always said that you should wait till you're 25 to have a baby. And I remember when I turned 25, I was like, man, I'm such a different person at 25 than I was at 18, 19, 21. Maybe there is some solace, you know, there's some wisdom, you know, of a woman who had three children that 25 maybe would have been a little easier, you know, because you're a little, I think, more prepared. The older that you are, the more prepared you are for that shift in life, because it is a shift.
Yes.
It is a shift. And especially if you're a working mom, not that stay-at-home moms don't have it, but, you know, I left my baby at 42 days, you know, 6 weeks postpartum, you know, as well as I do. And I left my baby with daycare and, you know, went and worked 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, which definitely helps no one with postpartum depression.
Exactly. And in the military, I was, like, just do your job.
Yeah. Yeah. I was late to work the first time I dropped my daughter off at daycare because I sit in the parking lot for a good 45 minutes and cried. And I got to work. And of course, everyone was like, so why are you late? I was like, because I didn't want to come. Because that tiny human isn't here. And now I don't know what to do with myself.
Exactly. So after you had your first child and then, you know, you were getting ready to have the second child, what about your career, about your Navy career, did you plan on getting out? Was it something that you just kind of decided with your husband and stuff? Did you have a voice?
Yeah, so when I had my second child, the Navy was going through a weird phase. And they were going to make me go to this secondary school to change jobs. And the school was, I think, like 3.5 or 4 months long, and it was in Maine. And my husband and I had the discussion of, then what happens?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be gone 4 months. My second baby would have been 9 weeks old at the time.
Oh.
I can't take my child with me
mm-hmm.
to go to school. I don't know anyone in Maine. I was breastfeeding, and so I declined the school. And the Navy was like, okay, you declined our option for you to stay in. And about 6 months later, I got out. So it just became my husband had more time in service. It was better for me to leave than for him to leave at the time. So, you know, it was definitely a joint decision, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
On the school itself, because at the time, you know, they were pushing people out, which still happens. But, you know, it's a decision that at the time was a really hard decision. I grew up wanting to go into the military. You know, for me, it was an escape. It was a way to go to college. So to leave was really hard. But my kids needed a parent, at least one, you know, and their dad had more time in service, and he was willing to stay and, you know, deploy and all of those brilliant things that come with this lifestyle. And so I left and we went to Japan. I got out in July of 2010 and we went to Japan January of 2011.
And with you saying that, it's crazy because like I hear my story in that as well. But then I know there's a lot of dual military spouses who can hear that their story in that as well, because sometimes I find that listening to other military spouses who were prior enlisted, they made the choice to get out to be home with the kids because they were the mom, and it makes more sense for the mom to be home because maybe they're the male spouse's career was going to take off more than theirs and stuff. And it's just like, I don't know if it's just our maternal instinct, even if we didn't think that we had one before we had kids, it kind of like kicks in. And I can definitely say that as a mother, my bond with my kids, like, I don't know, I feel like it's a super strong one. I feel like I would do anything just to make sure that this, you know, metaphorical ship runs right, you know?
Right.
And I feel like a lot of military spouses, dual military spouses, have to make that decision. And sometimes it really falls on the female, the mother, to get out.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, like, I can't speak for everyone's husband.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my husband personally, he probably would have been better at it because he is our nurturer. Like, that's his personality. He's the oldest in his family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, kids were but I think that the expectation of a stay-at-home mom, or the expectation that the man is to work or to serve and the woman is to get out and go home, I think that the expectation is there. I've actually heard it quite a few times from other military spouses that are prior enlisted that say, you know, one of us had to get out and the obvious choice was me.
Yeah.
As you know, like you say, as a mom, I never thought that I would be the mom that would be, I guess, clingy. but the first time you ever have to leave your kids for an extended amount of time, I'm not saying that it's not hard on dads, because I know it is, because I can see it in my own husband, but I don't know if I would have done as well with the separation as he has done.
Yeah.
You know, because for us, we've been together almost 13 years. This is his 12th deployment.
Oof.
And so, you know, I don't know if I would have done as well as he has done with that, you know, with not being able to know how my kids are, you know, not being able to call and talk to them. All of those things, I don't know if I could have done in hindsight.
Yeah.
Yeah, at 21, getting out of the Navy, I was like, oh, I can take on the world, because you're still, you know, 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a decade later, and I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah, not that brave anymore.
No, I'm kind of a coward, and I'm just going to stay over here in my house with my humans, and I'm going to, you know, those are my humans, and you leave my humans alone. In general,
don't touch the humans, or you're not gonna like the big human, the mama human.
Right. It's definitely something I never anticipated. Like I say, I had my first child and thought, okay, my job is good now, and I'm gonna go on. And then, you know, mama bear instinct does kick in, and something that you maybe never would have done prior to having children, you know. Women, you know, turning over their cars because their kid is in the car. And you think before you have kids, nobody really does that. And then you have a tiny human and you're like, well, burn it down. All of it for my tiny human.
Yep. Yep. Oh, yeah. So then after you got out, what was that transition like?
Oh, man. Talk about depression and isolation of a stay-at-home mom. I went from having a life, having people, even the people at work I didn't like, being able to go to lunch with my friends because my kids were at daycare, having any kind of social interaction with any person that didn't babble at me, to staying at home with kids that needed me all the time. It was always, you know, it was always something. My son was a little over a year old at the time, and it was probably, I would have to say, the biggest challenge of being a parent, because I went from working all the time to realizing how much work tiny people really were. You know, because it, you know, when I was working, I was dropping them off at 6 o'clock in the morning at daycare. I wasn't coming back to get them for, you know, 11, 12 hours sometimes. And I was taking them home and I was feeding them dinner and I was bathing them and they were going to bed. And that was our routine, where it became, I'm still getting up at 6 in the morning because the tiny humans are awake, to making breakfast and cleaning up breakfast and making a snack because they're hungry in an hour, and cleaning up all the messes and all the diapers. And it got really overwhelming for me personally, really fast. And when I got out of the Navy, my husband was deployed.
Yeah.
So not only was I now a stay-at-home mom with no life, I was a stay-at-home mom alone with no life. So it was definitely probably the most challenging transition I've ever had. I know a lot of people talk about when they have a second child, what a transition that is. It was not that hard for us. I mean, but once again, I was active duty. I was working full time and my kids just went to daycare. So,
yeah,
you know, it didn't change much, but transitioning out of the Navy was definitely, I would have to say maybe like an identity crisis, because I didn't know who I was. I lost, you know, part of who I was.
Yep. I mean, once you left your parents' house, that's when you were trying to find your identity. You right. kind of had a little bit of an idea, and then boom, you're a mom.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. It was definitely a whirlwind. It is probably the best word for it, because you kind of have to figure it out. Because I mean, at this time, social media was a little bit of a thing, but it wasn't, you know, a big thing. I think Facebook existed at that time, a little bit, but you know, you weren't finding mom groups. You know, I had mom friends, you and I were friends at the time, but taking two humans out was a lot.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
You know, finding places that you could go with two humans. You know, all of my mom friends had kids, and that made it even harder.
Yes.
For whatever reason, you know. And then, you know, for me, not quite six months after I got out of the Navy, we were moving overseas. You know, which was extra isolating, because then I had no friends at all. You know, I couldn't call Sam and be like, hey, do you want to have coffee, because I'm going out of my mind. You know, there was no one. I was on a base, my husband was working, and that was that. Like, I was sitting at home waiting for my husband to come home. Like, could he please come home now, because I need someone to talk to. My mom is asleep. Everyone I know in the U.S. is asleep right now.
I need an adult right now.
Some help. Yeah. So I think for stay-at-home moms, it's incredibly, incredibly isolating.
Yeah. It is. And there's, you know, there's still a lot of comparison on stay-at-home moms and working moms. And I think it really doesn't matter what side of the spectrum you're on, it's difficult either way.
That adaption to being a mom is hard, because it changes everything. Like, where not being a mom, you could just get up, and run to the grocery store.
Yes, girl.
Now you can't even go to the you can't even go through the drive-thru when you're starving at 2 a.m. because there's a person. Like, you have to get up. And then there's, you know, especially when they're babies, you're like, man, I got to get them up and get them in the car seat. And I haven't slept well in like 5 days. So is food really that important at this point? Do I really want to eat?
I know. It's like I'm on autopilot right now.
Is it even safe for me to drive a car?
Right.
And I think, especially with infants, you know, there's always that comparison between working moms and stay-at-home moms. And being a mom, period, is harsh. It's a very humbling experience because kids will kick you in the teeth every chance they get. And it's, you know, whereas like me as a stay-at-home mom, if I'm tired, I can take a nap. As a working mom, you can't. However, on the flip side of that, the working mom gets human interaction. Even if you hate your job, you still have human interaction. I know my husband and I had that conversation when we first moved to Japan, because I was like, but you get out of here. And he was like, but I go to work. And I was like, I get that. But you leave the house. Mm-hmm. And you're not dragging tiny humans with you.
Like, right?
You get to go have a conversation with someone else that doesn't involve screaming kids.
Right. I mean, you may have to deal with some bratty new
screaming kids of your own.
Yeah, but
they're not really yours.
Yeah, they get to leave at the end of the day. You get to go away. You can go pee in peace.
Yeah. Well, and I especially, like, I have a friend that just had her first, and she asked me, you know, how did you feel, right? And my best advice to any new mom is it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be all right. You're gonna get through it. You know, may not get through it unscathed, but you're good. And especially as a stay-at-home mom, it's something I tell my husband, I live here. You get to leave and you get to go to work. I live here. I work here. You know, this is it for me. I'm here all the time. You know, even if I go to the grocery store, I still bring home with me.
Yes. You know,
and that's something that if you've never had to do it, you wouldn't understand. You know, I live here. This is it. This is my life. Like, it's what we're doing.
Yep. I wake up here. I eat, sleep.
Yeah.
Make things happen here, and that's it. Like, this is.
And I feel like that counts for moms that have infants and moms that have high schoolers. You know, this is it. Like, this is my life. Even if your kids go to school, like, that's, you still live and work and exist in that one place all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which can, like I said, it could be isolating and it can be depressing and exhausting. Because I know sometimes, like, I look at, like, I'll come in my room and this is where I have my office on my computer and this is where, you know, I run a business. And I'll look at my bed sometimes and I'm like, ugh. Like, why? And sometimes I'll, like, take my office to the living room for a change of scenery, you know, because I live here.
Like, I just want to go to another room of the house for a minute. Switch
sometimes. Things. And sometimes, especially if I'm proofreading a book or I'm doing busy work, I will go sit on my front porch. I live in Florida and the weather is beautiful a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to sit on the porch, listen to an audiobook, and enjoy not sitting at my desk.
Yes.
For just a little bit.
I definitely want to get into what you are doing now, but before that, I kind of want to ask, at what point during this whole, like, transition from going into the Navy, getting out of the Navy, becoming a mom, all that stuff, where was the the light? Like, where did you finally breathe and say, okay, now it's getting easier. Now it's getting better. Now stuff is actually happening and it's working the way that I want it to.
Oh man. I probably have to say when my oldest started kindergarten for me. Because I got some semblance of an identity back. I was able to go have coffee with friends. I was able to volunteer. I was able to step out of being a mom and that being it into like, oh, there's Rachel. You know, I met her through X, you know, or so when my oldest started kindergarten, I volunteered at the school a lot. Which of course, yeah, I'm still with kids. I'm still dragging a tiny human with me. But I started college around the same time. I went back to school and so I was able to kind of figure out where I was going to go from there. How I was going to become me again. Me myself, I started counseling around the same time, which helped. You know, it gave me someone to talk to that didn't, as my mother would say, have a dog in the fight. You know, I could get rid of some of the mom guilt and, you know, talk to someone who was just like, it's gonna be all right. You know, someone that wasn't gonna, you know, that I wasn't going to feel judged with. Not that, you know, anyone else was really judging me, but I was. Yeah, so I would have to say when my oldest started kindergarten, I kind of got some of that identity back and realized, like, okay, you can still be a normal functioning human and take care of your kids and it's gonna be all right. But that was, I mean, the first time when I got out and moved to Japan, and that was the first time my husband and I had ever really lived together full time, where he wasn't gone half of every year. So for us, there was a lot of adjustment in all aspects of life for, I'd probably say, a good 2 years, where we were just always kind of in flux of what was going on. But yeah, when my oldest started kindergarten, I was able to get my youngest in part-time daycare, and I was able to like go get a cup of coffee and go sit in a therapist's office and cry for an hour. And that really helped me kind of see what was happening and what needed to happen. So I would say, yeah, I'd say probably from like the birth of my oldest till she was about five was struggle bus, you know, which is hard now that, you know, they're so much older. And I'm like, man, I missed all of those cute times because I was kind of zoned out. Yeah, you know? I was just kind of going through the motions.
I get that. It's kind of like almost a guilt. And then I do that now with my youngest, because he's about what, 6 years younger than my oldest. I'm trying to do everything different. I'm trying to soak in more of these memories and these moments, because with my oldest two, I just kind of, I feel like I didn't really appreciate those little moments.
Right. Well, because you're so young,
Yeah.
you know, and you're trying to figure out, like you say, it, you know, you're trying to figure out who you are and what you want to be when you grow up because you're not quite a grown up. You know, 18 is this arbitrary age. Like you say, we can join the military, we can vote, we can buy a gun, but it's arbitrary. Like it's just a random date that was picked from one day to the other. It doesn't equal maturity and it doesn't equal ability even, you know, and the maturity isn't there in the I say that some 18-year-olds are, you know, in a 40, their minds are 40 and they have it figured out. I was not that 18-year-old. I was a big time pantser. I was just flying by the seat of my pants and hoping for the best. And so, you know, it took me until I was 25, 26 to kind of get my head in the game. And my kids were much older by then. And like you say, there's some guilt that goes along with that.
Yep.
But, you know, I've told my oldest, as my daughter, you know, her and I grew up together. As I was raising them when they were tiny, I was growing up myself.
Yep.
You know, and I'm a pretty open parent myself. My kids both know that I've been in therapy. Because I feel like it's a stigma that shouldn't be there. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. There's nothing wrong with being like, look, I'm just not okay. I tell everyone all the time, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay. You're good. You figure it out.
Yeah.
You know. So.
And it's not weakness to try to get help or anything like that. Like, you need it. No. You need it to survive.
Yeah.
If you don't reach out, if you don't get that help, it's just going to eat you up.
Yeah. Well, you know, if there's an emergency, if your house is burning down, you'll call 911 and get the people out that know how to fight the fire.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like therapy is the same thing. I am just calling 911 because I need help.
Exactly.
I need someone that I don't have the tools. Like, if my car breaks down, I call a mechanic. So I don't have the tools to fix myself, but someone else does.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else has the ability to help me help myself.
Yep.
And I feel like, you know, especially as a mom, you know, there's a lot of mom guilt. There's a lot of mom shaming. And I won't say we in group, anyone else with me, but I myself, like, I am my own worst enemy in that, you know, facet. If me and my kids have a rough day, I lay in bed at night and think, wow, you really messed that one up. You know, and it's easy to do.
And do you think, do your kids ever talk to you about stuff like how, what they've experienced, how they feel, like what they see in you?
Yeah, especially my oldest. Like I say, her and I really, you know, we grew up together. And she knows, she can see it when I'm having just a bad day. And she'll be like, all right, mom, it's, you know, you're okay. You know, I'll do this for you. Like, hey, can I make you a cup of coffee? And she can, you know, she can see it. She can see it written on my face that today is just not going to be, you know, a good day. And both of them, you know, like my son, for the first time, when my husband deployed this time, this is the first time I've ever seen him cry when his dad left. And I asked him, because he went to walk to his room, and I was like, where are you going? And he was like, I don't want to cry in front of everyone. And I was like, come on, dude. I cry regularly, like 2 or 3 days a week. I'm standing in the kitchen crying because I'm just not having a good day. You know, I'm like, it's all right, dude. And so the older he's gotten, the more he has talked to me. He doesn't talk to me so much as he talks to his dad.
Mm-hmm.
But my father-in-law is really cool. He calls once a week to talk to the kids while Carlos is deployed. And so I'll usually give my phone to my son and let him go talk to his grandpa, because he just wants to talk to a dude. He doesn't want to cry to his mom, which is fine.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm like, because my father-in-law asked one time, well, am I overstepping? No. As long as he's talking to someone that's constructive, you know, that's not breaking him down or telling him he's a wimp because he's crying, I'm good with it. But yeah, both of my kids are pretty open. You know, and we homeschool, so they're here all the time. So generally, you know, like my daughter is, you know, old enough to have girl problems. And if she wakes up and she's just like not having a good day, you know, I generally give her a break as well. Like, okay, we're just not in it to win it today. let's bake, or, and homeschooling gives me that ability to just be like, okay, you know, because my son has ADHD, and so he will have days where he is wound up like a 10-day clock.
Oh boy.
And those days, I know for a fact, it's just not worth it to fight him to, you know, to do a paper of math. So what I'll do is I'll like get out the recipe book and I'm like, all right, let's double this recipe. So what are we going to do here? What are we going to do here? So we're still learning, but we're not sitting down and, you know, doing worksheets. So.
And then you get to,
you know.
So, I mean, it's a win-win.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then we get baked yummies, right?
Exactly.
Then everybody's happy because there was chocolate involved.
That is home ec right there. And it's good that you're teaching your kids how to bake, how to cook, and especially because, you know, when we were growing up, it's like girls are in the kitchen, boys are outside, but you're teaching your son how to bake so he doesn't have to, you know.
Oh yeah. So he doesn't have to have a wife to cook for him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But you know, I joke with everyone because my husband's a better cook than I am. I can cook.
Uh-huh.
You know, but my husband can cook. So, you know, and it's a interesting process. I always joked that I would that, you know, public schools were a thing for a reason, and I'm not a teacher, and I'm not, but it was what was best at the time for everyone involved. At some point, my kids are going to go back to school. My daughter's a sixth grader, so she will be going back to school. They're probably both going back next year.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll also depend on where we're living. If we're still in Florida or if we move back to Texas, or God only knows where, because nothing is allowed to be planned.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I think that I put a lot of pressure on myself the first few months with homeschooling, when it didn't have to be such a stressful process. But I feel like even like when my kids were in school, I would stress myself out about the amount of homework that they would have, or, you know, exactly when we were getting it done, things of that nature.
Yeah.
So I remember when my kids were little and I was like, I'm never going to sleep again. And now I sleep, but there's a whole different set of stressors.
Yeah. You're as a new mom, your stresses are like, oh, if I don't go to sleep now, I have to wake up in an hour because the baby's going to be up in an hour. So I might as well just stay awake here. And, you know, but now it's like you've got all these things running through your mind.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
And I don't think media helps. Things that are going on in our world doesn't help. And now it's like, holy cow. Like as you get older, not like, as you become an older mom, but you know, as you become more seasoned as a mom, you're just like, crud, like, why is this happening to me?
Right. And I remember having the conversation with another mom one time. And I was like, you know, when you get pregnant, all I could think was, let me have a healthy baby. And mm-hmm. then as they're infants, you're like, just, you know, can we just make it another day? Can we just make it another week or another year or whatever? You know, the thought process is at that time. And I said, and you know, at 18, 19 years old, I wasn't thinking about what kind of world I was bringing my children into. And now that they're, you know, halfway to adulthood, that's the stressor, is what am I turning out into the world? And what is the world going to do to this tiny human that I have now, you know, cultivated for 12 years?
Exactly. Exactly. Now you're like in a different mom mindset.
Right. Right.
But now that your kids are older and they're able to be a little bit more independent, do you feel comfortable with who you're bringing out into the world?
I think that that's the biggest heartache for me as a mom, is when my children do something that disappoints me.
Yeah.
Because then it's, you know, I have taught you better than this. Like, I spent years crying at night over, you know, the amount of trouble that you were getting into for, you know, touching things that you weren't supposed to or whatever it may be. I feel like if I have raised decent humans, that's my goal. I don't need them to be perfect. I don't need them to be president or brain surgeons or rule the world. I just need them to be decent humans. I need them to look at other humans and think, you're worthy of my time and you're worthy, you know, of me. And to also know where that cutoff is of you're not worthy of me. And, you know, this isn't healthy and all of those things. So I feel like as a mom, I am raising decent humans. But yeah, I think that as your kids get older, that becomes the biggest worry is, have I done enough? Have I taught them enough? Have I, you know, instilled these things that are so important to me in them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As someone who's from the outside looking in, you know, I follow you on social media. We've been friends for a while. We've evolved as friends and stuff. I can definitely see that you're doing, you know, a great job. And I don't think enough moms hear that. I really don't.
I agree. Like,
I think you are doing a fantastic job. Like, the stuff that you talk about on social media, you know, sometimes it cracks me up and you share, like, you know, funny things and then you share real things. But there's never a moment in time where I've seen, like, where, you know, it's worried me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Like, well, oh no, what kind of stuff are you saying to your kids? And what kind of stuff are you saying? You know, that kind of stuff. Like,
well, and I think as moms, it's probably the hardest. And I say moms, and I'm including dads because dads have it hard too. I'm not saying that moms are any different really of a parent. They're equal parents. I fully believe that. But as a mom myself, I feel like there's this burden that we put on ourselves and that we put on each other to be perfect and to only show the good parts. I think that it's a good and bad thing of social media because most of us don't post bad things. What's bad that's happening, I generally share funny things or things that have made me chuckle. But I've also got on there quite a few times myself and been like, today is a struggle bus day. Like, I had a hard time getting out of bed today. You know, I have some PTSD issues. I have some depression issues. And I think that everyone at some point has been a little depressed. And just to know that that's okay. And that being a bad mom sometimes and just having a bad day with your kids is totally normal and it's all right. Like, okay, today you kind of lost it and you yelled probably way too much, but tomorrow is another day and you got it.
Yep.
You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. We're always just going to share what, you know, like the high points, but I do like that you share low points as well, because it helps. And, you know, I try to share funny things because I feel like if I share a lot of what I see a lot of people sharing, like, you know, like hateful things and stuff, and I'm just like, is this really what you want to see every single day on your newsfeed? Like, come on, you know? If I shared that kind of stuff, I'd probably be miserable, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, yeah, me too. I have unfollowed quite a few things over the years, including like meme pages and stuff like that, because it got ugly. I feel like day to day we all kind of see enough ugly if you watch the news, or heaven forbid you pick up, you know, your social media sometimes. It gets really ugly.
And, oh yeah.
It's something I know when we moved back to the States, my daughter was like, I can have a cell phone now, right? And I was like, for what? For what? Because I know, like, you and I are the same age. We all had bullying. I think that social media makes that a lot different because whereas you and I would go home and it would be over, now it's following kids home. You never have a respite from the bad things that are being said about you. And I think that that's really sad that something where I can follow your life and I know what's going on, you know, with you and your kids, and I can see how grown they are and things like that that are beautiful that I love. Just like when you came to Florida and you were able to, you know, reach out and be like, hey, let's go have lunch. I think that those are beautiful things about social media. The opposite side of that is really ugly, though.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
really, really ugly. And I'm like you, I'm good. Like, I'm
Yeah.
good. I just don't, at this age, I'm like, okay, you guys just, y'all keep that over there and I'm gonna keep mine over here and not do it. However, you did say that I'm a good mom and I think that you're doing a really good job too.
Well, thank you.
And I think that as moms and, you know, I think that that's something that we could all use more of, like a, hey, it might have sucked today, but you're still doing a really good job. You showed up, and I think that that's an important thing that not a lot of us talk about. Like maybe today wasn't the best day, and maybe this last like 6 months wasn't the best 6 months. I mean, in all honesty, it's not just a bad day sometimes.
Yeah.
It's bad weeks, it's bad months. Like I say, I don't really remember a lot of my kids as very young years because I was kind of in a fog. You know, I was showing up, you know, they were okay, but you know, were we really engaged? Not really. Were we, you know, was I doing everything I could? Probably not. But I think that showing up for your kids and just being there sometimes, you know, is what it is. You know, that's that.
Yep. And this is for new moms especially. If you're worried about what your kid thinks about you and stuff like that, just know that all your kid wants is for you to be there.
Yeah, just show up.
Just hold them when they want to be held. Love them. If they say, you want to sit with me for a minute, don't, I know that sometimes they'll ask you that like repeatedly, but that's their way of saying, I love you and I need you right now.
Yeah.
Sit with them. If you don't want to sit on the floor with them, don't sit on the floor with them because I don't want to sit on the floor with my kids. Like, I can't get back up. That stuff
Right.
hurts.
My knees hurt. My back hurts. Quit playing.
Couch? Can we sit in an elevated position, child? Like,
Right. You want to
but
consider
just
being, but also on that note as well. I know me personally, I can't speak for any other moms. But like I have, like I said, I have some PTSD issues. And I get what I consider like touched out. I have my oldest is very affectionate, and by that I mean she wants like 9 million hugs a day. And some days when I have really high anxiety, or I've had a bad night because I do have night terrors, I actually physically like I can't deal with the touching after a while. But her and I will do what I call an air hug. So when she wants a hug, she'll come to me and, you know, like blowing kisses, we will do like an air hug. And I'll make sure to tell her, you know, like, I love you. And I want you to come in here and give me an air hug, even though it's not a real hug. But it's something, you know, she knows about me. She knows that if I tell her I can't, I mean, I can't. It's not that I don't love you. It's not that I don't want a hug. It's that right now I physically, like, I can't. And it's the same, like, my son is exactly the opposite. He is so my kid. He doesn't really want to, like, give hugs and kisses and but like every once in a while he'll walk by and like bump me and you know hold up
Oh.
his fist like he wants a fist bump and I'm like, all right dude, let's fist bump. That's cool. You just wanted, you know, you wanted some sign of, you know, affirmation.
Yeah.
And that's okay because we all speak different love languages. Like we all have ways that we want to be shown or told that we are loved and, you know, that we can love you back. And everybody's different. And that includes your kids. That's something no one ever told me. Like, no one ever told me that, you know, they would really be tiny humans. I just figured that they would be like me, and they're not.
No, they are their own people, and that's what makes them so great. That's, I feel like at the end of the day, you just kind of like stand back in awe. Like sometimes I catch myself, I'm like, holy cow, like these kids say these things and I didn't even realize they could talk like that, and I didn't realize they act like this,
or that they had thoughts about things, you know. Especially, I think that that's the coolest part of watching them grow up, because when they're babies and you're exhausted, they go to sleep at night and you just stand there and watch them sleep, thinking like, I remember standing in their doorway thinking, I made that. That's mm-hmm. mine. I grew it. And man, is it beautiful. Like, because yeah. it's asleep and it's not crying at me or, you know, pooping on the, you know, bedding. But as they get older, you know, because I know my kids will say something, you know, they'll say things sometimes. And I'm like, you have to stop and think, whoa, how did that, they really just, like, that just happened. Where did that come from? It's because they have their own thoughts and they're their own people and they're making their own decisions. You know, like my youngest is 10 and he is right now making decisions realistically for his life in the future.
Yeah.
You know, he is making decisions right now that could affect him here in 10 years. And it's something, you know, like as they've gotten older that I've had to tell them, you know, like the things that you do right now mm-hmm. can affect you in 10 years. So be aware of what's happening.
Man, we're getting old.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you. I was talking to Carlos, which is my husband, and for anybody listening, the other day on FaceTime, and I was like, dude, in less than a month, we will have a 12-year-old. And I'm like, how did we get here? She's two-thirds of the way grown. In 6 more years, she will be an adult.
Woo!
And that's kind of mind-blowing and scary and really weird that's where I'm at in life, you know, because when you're tiny, humans are tiny. I remember thinking, oh, they're never gonna walk. I'm always gonna have to carry them. And then they start walking and you're like, man, they are into everything. We are never going to get over the stage of like them grabbing. I remember in Japan, my daughter grabbing a jar of pickles out of the refrigerator and smashing it. She dropped it and glass went everywhere. And I was using the bathroom, you know, like I'm just trying to pee. And I remember thinking, oh, they are never going to not get into everything. Like I can't even have pickles in the refrigerator. And now, you know, because my kids are homeschooled, so we're lazy, so we don't have to get up at a specific time. So, you know, my kids get up and they, you know, they make their own breakfast and they start their homework because they're old enough to know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think about it now and I'm like, man, because I have a friend that has toddlers and she's like, oh, Rachel. And I'm like, it gets better, my friend. At some point they become self-reliant. But then, like we were talking about, it just adds this whole other layer of worry, because in 6 years my daughter is going to be an adult.
That's so disturbing, because that means my son's going to be an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they're going to be, like, released on the world.
More self-sufficient, being able to do, you know, be their own humans and come into their own. You're able to find your identity again.
Right.
And now this leads into, like, I'm really excited to talk about this. Tell everybody what Rachel is today. What is Rachel doing now?
So Rachel is now a small business owner. I own a business that does promotions for indie authors. I have been a word nerd my whole life. So I can tell people now that I read for a living, and I do. And it's fabulous. My kids are homeschooled, so they are home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But self-sufficiency gives me the ability to, like right now, go in my room, shut my door, and do what I have to do. So yeah, so I'm a small business owner, which is nice, especially as a middle spouse, because I can work from anywhere. I can, you know, work when I need to work. My kids make fun of me because I'm a night owl. And so sometimes they'll catch me, like when they go to bed at 9, they'll be like, "Mom, are you working?" And I'm like, "Yeah," because I didn't feel it at 10 o'clock in the morning. But now, like, I'm awake and I need something to do. So yes, yeah, so I'm a small business owner. I take care of my mom as well. She lives with me. I'm a book blogger. I wear lots of hats. Lots and lots of hats. But yeah.
And I know the name of the business, but what?
It's Yours Truly. Yours Truly Book Services. Yeah. And I have my business partner lives in Ohio, which everybody thinks is really funny. We've never actually met in person. So the beauty of social media there is. Yeah. So it's cool. It's we've been open a little over 6 months now. So it's been an interesting experience. It's given me a lot to do and feel like I am being productive in my marriage, and, you know, in the household itself. And so, yeah, it's given me, you know, friends and an identity again, which is always nice. 'Cause being a stay-at-home mom sometimes really limits your ability to get a job, and keep a job. Mm-hmm. And all of those things. So being able to work for myself and from home is kind of awesome.
And also being a military spouse too, it's like, because we're constantly moving, sometimes people have a hard time wanting to hire you. And then we turn to being an entrepreneur, and you know, we find our things, and with that we find our identity, and we're like, "Hey, I'm actually pretty good at this. I'm gonna do this."
I know, Miss Sam, and because you run a business as well.
Mm-hmm.
You do. And I love watching, because that's something I have to say too. I've loved watching your kind of journey as well. I mean, it's, you and I have been friends for quite a long time now, especially in our lifestyle. You know, being a middle spouse is not easy. And you move around a lot, but I think that watching people evolve as people is really something that social media gives us, that, you know, 20 years ago would have never been an option. I would have never been able to stay in contact with as many people as I have without social media. But yeah, being a small business owner has lots of pros. It has lots of cons.
Yeah.
no one else is going to do it. So for me personally, it's been a struggle because I get depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so making myself sometimes get up and, as I say, pull my big girl panties on and do what I have to do sometimes can be very hard. It can be a struggle bus because no one else is going to step in and do it. It's not like calling in sick to a real job and being like, "Okay, I called in sick because I'm just not feeling it today."
Yeah.
You know, and that's the same concept as being a mom. You know, like a couple of years ago, we lived in Texas. My kids brought home the flu. That's the first time any of us have ever had the flu in my entire life. And my kids were sick 1 week. And then they were going back to school. They had been fever free for like 2 days. They were going back to school on Monday. They got sick over Christmas break. So we had all been stuck together in a house for like 6 weeks.
No.
They were going back to school and I spiked like 104 fever.
No.
And I was absolutely miserable. And that's something that, you know, like, before kids, you can just be a miserable cow in your bed, you know, sick as a dog. But with kids, you know, like, there's still people that have to eat.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, I'm a migraine sufferer.
Mm.
So, okay, your head hurts and you can barely see, but like the tiny humans, they still have to eat.
Yeah.
There is no sick day. There is no like, okay, I'm tapping out. I'm done.
Yeah.
It's just, you have to do it. Which I find kind of teaches us some resiliency too, because, you know, then you're like, okay, well, it could be worse. I could be, you know, I could have the stomach flu right now. That could be worse.
True.
So.
True. And then they see, you know, it also, it's not like your spouse isn't helping. It's not like your husband isn't helping. It's just, he's not there.
Right.
You know?
Well, and he goes to work.
Or, yeah, his job makes him leave.
And something that's very singular to our lifestyle, my spouse can't call in sick.
Mm-hmm.
So if everyone in the house is sick, including him, he still has to get up and go to work. There really isn't, you know, sick days. You don't just call your boss and say, hey, I'm not coming in today. I'm not feeling it. There's
yeah.
a whole like process that has to happen for you, you know, to take a sick day. While you're active duty. So yeah, there's that whole added layer of being miserable, you know.
And that's when it's like that's why I hate it too when my husband's sick, because he could be sweating. He could be like profusely sweating.
Oh yeah.
And he'll take like a Mucinex, or he'll take like Dayquil or something, and he'll go. And I'm just like, now I got to worry about you.
Right. What I see though.
Because,
yeah. But, and that's the reality of it, you know, whereas a stay-at-home mom outside of the middle spouse world,
mm-hmm.
her husband at some point is going to come home. I call it Murphy's Law of deployment. It never fails. My husband has been gone not quite a month. My car already broke down. It's Murphy's Law of deployment. Within probably, I'd say, the next 6 weeks, everyone in my household is going to end up sick. It's just how it is. And, you know, my husband doesn't just come home. He's, you know, he's gone. And that's that. You know, and especially when you have smaller kids, I think that it's harder. Like now my kids, I'd just be like, okay, grab the trash can and go to your room. You know, let me give you some Motrin here and go be miserable and, you know, puke over there. keep your germs to you. You know, when they're toddlers and they're crawling up in your lap and they're, you know, sniffling everywhere and they're crying, you know, what do you do with that? You hold them and accept the cooties, because
yes,
that's what's happening, you know, and go stock up on vitamin C and eat as much as humanly possible, because you are going to get sick.
72 hours later, you will feel it.
Oh yeah. And it's usually about the time the kids are on the upswing. Like if you didn't all catch it at the same time, you yep. either get sick before the kids, and so you're miserable for a week, and then the kids are miserable for a week. And so, you know, or you catch it like the day after they do. And so they're, you know, puking and you're puking. And it's like, okay, well, this is my life. How glamorous it is.
I love this. I love this conversation. I love how, like, it started off. and now it's like, we have, like, this funny spin on things, because as a mom, you have to laugh at yourself. You have to laugh.
You either have to laugh about it or cry about it.
Yeah.
At some point. I can laugh about it now, because now it's funny, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, like picking your kid up when they're 6 months old out of a booster or out of a high chair at a restaurant, and there's, you know, poo running down it and their diaper has exploded. At the time, it's mortifying and you're like, oh, I'm never coming back to this restaurant and I'm going to cry on my way like to the bathroom because I have to clean them up before I can put them in the car seat or my car is going to smell like poo.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in tears and it's mortifying. And now it's like, well, it happens to everyone has been out in public and had an explosive diaper. And if you haven't, I will like send me a message because I'm going to send you like a kudos.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and when your kids are tiny, it is absolutely mortifying. Or when your 3-year-old throws himself down in the grocery store and is screaming bloody murder and you haven't slept well in 2 days because everybody's been sick and you're walking through the grocery store crying because once again, it is absolutely mortifying. In 10 years, it's not nearly as mortifying. You're like, well, you know, and especially now, like I'll walk past the mom in the grocery store that's crying and I'm not a touchy feely, like huggy person, but I will like pat her on the back and I'm like, it's going to be all right. It's all right. Just push on because it sucks. And in 10 years, you'll laugh about it because in 10 years, it's funny.
Yes. In 10 years, you'll be like, you'll be the one patting another mom on the shoulder going, it's good, you're fine, I promise.
I think one of my favorite memes on Facebook is a Hunger Games meme, and it's where Katniss is holding up her fingers, and it's like to the mom on aisle 3 with the screaming toddler, I see you. And I was, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh man, but really? I feel that one because we've all been that mom, or you're getting your kid in the car. I remember, especially when my oldest was like a year old, because about a year old. Yeah. And I was already pregnant with my second one. And I remember picking her up one time and putting her in her car seat and her whacking her head, you know, like I didn't drop her down far enough to put her in the car seat and crying all the way home.
Oh no.
Because I whacked her head. And then you see other people and you're like, everybody has done it.
Yeah.
Everybody. And you see the mom in the parking lot that they've just whacked their kid's head. The kid is screaming and she's trying to get the screaming kid in the car seat. And I'm like, oh, Buenasita. Because I want to go give her a hug and be like, I promise it gets better.
I remember the other day I was at the grocery store and there was a mom with 2 kids. I don't know if they were her kids, but they looked pretty close in age. They were like under 3. And they were in one of those little shopping carts that has the little car. So right. They were sitting steering wheels. And then she had another baby in her front. Like she was baby carrying. So I don't know if she was their mom, their nanny or something. It doesn't matter because she was taking care of babies.
I mean, yeah.
She was flustered. And I'm just staring at her. Like not like, you know, to be nosy or whatever. But I'm just like, I gave her like this soft look. Like, it's fine. It's, you know, it's. Sucks now and it's gonna suck for a couple more years, but 10 years from now you're gonna look at another mom, you're gonna be like, oh man, I remember those days, and you're gonna go about picking apples or whatever at the produce section, like
right. And you're gonna be like, man, bless her, because we have all, the struggle is real, as it is said, and I think every mom out there has that struggle or something, you know, similar. Like, we don't all have the exact same experiences. But if you get a group of moms together, they can definitely share some horror stories. Because we've all done it, and you know, in the moment it's mortifying and you think, is it ever gonna get better, or am I gonna be stuck in Groundhog's Day with the screaming baby or the obstinate toddler or the kid that is struggling in school? Is it ever going to change? And, you know, the answer is yes.
Yes.
You know, it does change. I'm not saying it gets better in every aspect, because once again, it just changes in the worry. But it definitely changes and it does get better in a lot of ways.
It does. And also, if you need help, get help. Talk to somebody. Find your tribe. I know that's so cliche, but find someone. I don't care who it is, a stranger on the internet. Do not be afraid to reach out, because people want to help you. People are there. You know, the right people will help you. It doesn't matter who you talk to. If you feel like you can't talk to your spouse, or your own parents for whatever reason, reach out to somebody. And don't always listen to those mom groups, because that's just a rabbit hole of suck sometimes. I'm not gonna lie.
No, yeah, for sure.
There's I feel like there's more judgment in a lot of mom groups than there are like good advice. So I don't even go on those anymore.
Yeah,
but
no.
reach out to somebody, anybody.
Yeah. Well, and if you're struggling and you don't know where to go for help, I have no shame for one. But I would have no shame myself personally in calling 911. Be safe. If you are at your breaking point where you absolutely are fed up, I don't feel like there's any shame. Emergency services are emergency services for a reason. If you feel like you're in crisis, even if no one else feels like it was a crisis, if it feels like a crisis to you, it is a crisis. And also, as moms, don't let anybody else, you don't have to have any kind of validation for your feelings. No one controls how you feel. And I feel like I wish somebody would have told me that a decade ago.
Yep.
I wish somebody would have been like, it's okay to not be ecstatic to have a kid. It's okay to not be ecstatic that you're pregnant again. And I wish someone would have told me that, because it's not necessarily how everyone feels about it, you know? So, and it's okay to have bad days and lose your crap sometimes. It's also okay sometimes to just, you know, be like, okay, I'm done for today. We're having sandwiches for dinner, and mom is going to like go sit in her bathroom and cry for an hour.
Okay. No shame. BLT for dinner with a side of chips. Oh, yes. I'm there all the time.
They ate.
Yep.
I have a group of military spouses that I volunteer with. And they do like a twice monthly check-in. And every so often they'll email and be like, so how is everyone? And I'm like, look, everybody lived today. I'm just saying, everyone lived. Like, nothing was great and nothing was terrible. Everyone survived.
Yes. And that's all that matters.
For sure. Yeah. But I agree with you on the sometimes mom groups are a suck. I feel the same way in our particular lifestyle of spouses groups. Sometimes they're really helpful and sometimes they're really horrendous.
Girl, that's like another podcast episode. Like, seriously, I could go on an hour-long rant about military spouse groups, like toxic and all that stuff. Like, but that's another episode.
And, you know, moms are really, we're really hard on one another. Just in general, you know, and it's hard to be a mom and we're hard on ourselves. So I feel like just give yourself a break. No one is perfect. If you think that you know, you're perfect, just give me a call. I'll let you know how imperfect motherhood absolutely is. I've done a lot of jobs. You know, lived a lot of places. I've known a lot of people, and it's by far the hardest thing I've ever done.
You're not lying.
I mean, no one tells you that, you know, no one tells you just absolutely how rough it can be. That's generally the advice I give to all of my friends, you know, that are now having babies, and they're like, what is your best advice? And I'm like, embrace the suck sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's, you know, I'm gonna hit that on a pillow.
Right, embrace the suck. And I feel like that about a lot of facets of my life. Like, when it's just really cruddy, I'm like, all right, just this is just where we're at in life. It's just how it goes.
Yep.
If you never had any bad happen, you would never know that you're having good. So for the bad to be bad, you have to have the good. You know, to know that something good is happening, you have to know what the bad feels like too. So
you're right.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate this conversation. I had a fantastic time, honestly, like listening to everything you have to say. But before we get off, I want to do a little bit of rapid fire, ask your mother questions, because the podcast name is Ask Your Mother. So you're not my mom, but I'm asking my mother. So these are just like rapid fire questions.
All right.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Describe your children in a single sentence. Describe each one in a single sentence.
Oh, my daughter, super sassy, headstrong, and brilliant. My son, creative, amazing, caring, and a little crazy.
What is something that having a child has taught you?
Patience. Self-worth. Yeah. I mean, those two things by far. They have taught me how to be patient, and they have taught me that I am worth loving myself and loving other people.
What was the most surprising thing you discovered about being a mom?
Oh, the unconditional love, knowing that for a fact there's nothing in this world that they can do to make me not love them. Be disappointed in them, yeah, but not love them, that's not a possibility.
Let's see. What habit did you wish your children didn't have?
Oh, fibbing. Man.
For those of you who don't know what fibbing is, that's lying.
Lying, yeah. That silver-tongued, like, automatic reaction that preteens and teenagers have of, did you get into this? And they're like, no. But they're holding it in their hand. What?
That child logic. Like, okay, I wasn't your age one time.
Right. Or they have it in their hand and they like jerk it behind their back real fast. And I'm like, I have eyes. Like, I'm almost like my vision is going and I get that. But I have eyes. They work. Yeah, so lying, fibbing, and thinking that I'm an idiot.
Do you share any similarities with your child or children, both physical and personality?
So me and my son are incredibly alike. He is uber sarcastic. He will argue with absolutely anything. So I am the person that I will intentionally take an opposite view just to argue about it. Not meanly, but I want the conversation. I like it. I like the open dialogue. And my son is that way. He will argue with you for anything. And he looks a lot like me and a lot like my father. My daughter is very constant in who she is, very unapologetic, which I can appreciate because you know this about me, but I am very much like, you get what you see and this is it.
Yes.
So those are things that they're like me about that I can appreciate. No matter how much it makes me want to, like, you know, lose my crap when they're sarcastic. And I'm like, sarcasm is not for children.
It's like you see the little mini versions of you and you're like, oh, man.
Oh, stop. Wait a minute. Right? Yeah. Every time. Like, especially as my daughter gets older because she's, you know, getting into the teenage years, and puberty has already way set in. And it's like, she doesn't think before she speaks, which I am 100% guilty of, but she'll like snap at me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, huh? What? And then I'll have to go to my mom because my mom lives with me. So I'm lucky enough to be like, mom, go save your granddaughter. I know I did this as a kid, but I can't take it. I cannot deal with a miniature version of me all the time. Yeah.
And then the last question, where would you like your children to be in 10 years?
Happy. Productive members of society. It's all I can ask for. I don't care If they ever get married or have children, or get college degrees or rule the world, I just want them to be happy with themselves as much as the human condition will allow. And I want them to be productive members of society. You know, I don't want their quote unquote happiness to be, you know, sitting behind bars.
Yeah. Oh, I gotcha.
So yeah, just happy, productive members of society. Whatever path they choose, you know, is their choice. I was lucky enough, I didn't have parents that ever pushed me in a specific direction. So that's kind of my plan. If, you know, my daughter decides to go to art school and be a starving artist the rest of her life, I won't be ecstatic, because who wants to see their children struggle? But, you know, that'll be what it'll be. My son is convinced he's going to go in the military, which will break my heart a little bit, because it's not a, you know, an easy choice. But I would be super proud.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So 10 years, happy and productive, whatever that looks like. I'm not even sure what happy and productive looks like for me. So
good luck.
Right. Yeah. Right. At 22 and 20. You know, I'm not sure that's even possible, but I can hope, right?
Yeah, I'm an optimist. It's all right.
Send up some extra prayers, you know, for it, and hope for the best.
Yeah. So. Well, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. You are my first official guest, so
yay!
This was a really fun, like, seamless conversation. I really enjoyed it. For everybody who is listening, once again, Rachel Talavera is the co-owner, is that correct?
Or yes. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Of Yours Truly Book Services. There is a Facebook page. It's Yours Truly Book Services. There's a website.
Yes.
Yours Truly,
which is Yours Truly Book Services.com.
I think, yes, there's, ma'am, an Instagram. I'm looking at the page right now on Facebook. So.
Oh yeah, we have Instagram and Twitter as well. Which is, Twitter's the only one that's odd, and it's at Book Truly. Because Yours Truly happens to be a clothing brand as well.
Oh.
Yeah. You don't know that until you get on Instagram and try to find yourself.
So go check them out if you are somebody who is writing stories, an author. They offer fantastic services. They have great reviews. And yeah, Rachel loves to read, so you're in good hands.
I do. I've been in the indie world for quite some time now, so
yeah,
it is an interesting thing. Thank you for having me, Sam. Yeah. I appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for coming.
I will. Yes, ma'am. We'll talk to you
later. All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye.